You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. A guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
You gotta be careful what you let people see behind the curtain. Got to be careful with how you show your hand. This is advice I read on Reddit forever ago. And it's not really writing advice specifically. It's actually DMing advice for being a dungeon master, D&D. He was discussing how so much of his campaign, he had a certain amount planned and a certain amount that he riffed. And at one point, his players were so enthused about the section that he'd just run. Like, how did you do this? How did you plan this? And he told them that he didn't. That he just kind of was riffing at that part. And some of the enjoyment, some of the light behind their eyes kind of went out.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that advises people who are suckers for Seers. With me today is Chris, or Seer Sucker, who writes a lot of cool stories over on Royal Road. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Doing pretty well, thank you. You're writing stuff such as Dead Man, Armor, and, you know, this like small story called like Downtown Druid. Which is pretty freaking cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just trying to put stuff out there people like, you know? Just don't get me in the steer, you know? That's the only thing.
I always love it, by the way. You know how we were like talking for like half an hour before the podcast began, and like we recorded it. It was great. It's all going to be on Patreon. But the moment I start the podcast, everyone's like,
I know, it felt like a hard reset, you know. Immediately it felt like I was starting the whole podcast over.
Yeah, but oh god, it's a time loop story now.
Oh gosh, I'm not the biggest time loop fan, to be honest.
You're not the biggest time loop fan?
I'm not the biggest time loop fan. I don't like him in TV very much. I don't like him in books very much. I have not read Mother of Learning for that reason. I'm a horrible Royal Road writer and reader, because a lot of the stuff at the top just totally doesn't interest me. But
why don't you like it? Because it gets too repetitive?
It's not the repetition, it's just the whole theme. I don't like the actual mechanical trope of a time loop. I can like it for a single episode of a TV show. Maybe I know Supernatural had one that was pretty entertaining back in the day, but at a certain point, I'm just like, I just don't like it. It doesn't vibe with me, as the kids would say these days. There's no like, I can't give you a firm, exact reason I don't like it. I just don't.
Yeah, I can highly recommend. Perfect Run. Really can recommend that. That's a really, really good book. I think you would actually enjoy that, because it's, well, maybe not. Maybe not if you're not into exploring what could have happened if a change had been different. Because I think that's basically the entire or choices have been different, I should rather say. Because I think that's the entire premise, or what people love about time loops, right? Is that you can kind of just see what could have happened if something had gone differently.
I mean, I see appeal, but in real life, I live with no regrets, never looking back. So there's no real, you know, I don't get the appeal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. That's then I would still recommend Perfect Run. Later.
I mean, yeah, if I have, if I had the time, there wouldn't be a single book that people recommend that I would not be reading. Honestly, yes. Like, I, if I could just like find a cave somewhere and bring in my Kindle and lock myself in a room with a bunch of books and my phone, I would be reading everything people recommend, even if it's not just, to my exact tastes. You know,
lean against a wall and watch the shadows dance in front of you while people with a torch are running behind you.
Yes, there would be a lot of cave allegory. Yeah, that's exactly what it would be, and I'd be happier for it.
Yes,
put me back in the Matrix that is the Plato's allegory of the cave.
Yes, exactly. Do you want to talk about your book? So, Downtown Druid, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what it's about.
Absolutely, it is about a bastard. A thief who is trapped in an underground prison called the Pit that is at the center of this grand, huge city-state called Rendhold. And it's kind of about him gaining druidic powers and patronage of, like, druidic entities. And that gives him kind of the edge to kind of make his way in the prison and eventually, spoilers, find his way out. But
it's the ultimate American fantasy, the right to bear arms.
Oh, you should be a little ashamed of that, but I did laugh. So
no,
maybe you
shouldn't. Nope.
That was pretty good.
Nope. I don't have any regrets, you know.
No regrets. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, go.
Right, but bears are a ways off in his future if he ever manages to commune with them, because he's a city druid, which I kind of, there's a gaming system, a tabletop gaming system called Pathfinder. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a D&D 3.55 is what I like to call it. And there was a advanced player's book that showed these different paths for druids. And I remember just reading, it was like a blurb this big about, some druids actually live in the city and they commune with vermin, like rats, raccoons, the snakes in the sewers and things like that. And so they have this connection to that kind of life. And I thought that was really cool, but mechanically very weak in the game itself, which doesn't make sense to me. Because in my mind, if you can control a horde of rats and roaches and bats, pigeons, anything, you are immediately one of the most powerful people in a city just by default. There's rats everywhere. I've been to New York, been to San Francisco, been everywhere. Mm-hmm. And one thing I can tell you they all have in common is there's vermin all over the place.
Yeah.
And I just, a lot of my stories are actually based on the fact that, like, a character concept I have for a tabletop game doesn't actually mechanically function the way I want it to. So I'm just going to write a story where it absolutely does, because I have full control of the mechanics. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm going to out myself here. Many of the stories that I write are basically, hey, I really want to run this campaign in this setting or with a story. But then, you know, the players get in the way.
I know. They're the worst.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, that being said, I am going to run a Blades in the Dark hack based on Tobes in a second.
I have my Blades in the Dark core book, like, right over here on my bookshelf, actually. I'm a big fan
so good.
Of it conceptually. Yeah. If I could get, like, more than four people to commit to more than two sessions, someday I really hope to play it, you know?
It is really, really good. Like, really, really good. I think we were going to do this on my little, like, private friend circle Discord at some point, but I just really don't have the time to commit to this bullshit right now. I get so much going on.
I completely understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the other thing
about...
Oh, go ahead.
Maybe we should. Just full stop.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that at some point.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Just do it.
But you were saying, sorry.
Well, the other thing about Downtown Druid is that it's a bit of a riff on my favorite classical story, which is The Count of Monte Cristo. I think a lot of people picked up on that very quickly, especially I think the one that really everyone all of a sudden got it was when it's revealed that his ex-girlfriend's name's Mercedes, because that's not a typical fantasy name that you see sprinkled into things. And it was so obvious after that point that I almost considered changing her name. I had some ideas like Acura and Ford, Honda.
Weren't you scared that it would drive people away?
You know, it actually, I had a patron drop the story, and he put in his survey thing. He was like, "I'll just read The Count of Monte Cristo," and I'm like, you know, it's a riff, it's inspired by it, but I think at the point that he's a bastard of elf, orc, and human with a touch of dwarf descent, and you know, he's controlling rats and things, that it might have deviated enough.
I don't remember that from the corp, yeah.
You know, I would hope.
Yeah, but I don't remember that.
Yeah, you don't remember that part in Dumas' story?
No.
Yeah, it's in there. If you look really deep, you'll see it. It's subtext.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like basically like reading 1,000 Acres and going like, I know how this ends. So
yeah,
I know. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
But okay, go ahead. You were saying like, hey, I want to write The Count of Monte Cristo, but with rats.
Yeah, I mean that's a big part of it, and I like prison stories. I just watched the HBO show Oz. I don't know if you're familiar with Oz.
Nope.
It's like there was this string of early premium TV shows. Oz was one of them. The Wire was another. And I just was like, you know, these are considered foundational pieces of art. So I watched them and they were very good. They were rough. There's a lot of things in them that you just couldn't do in TV today, but I liked that. I liked that they were a little different. And Oz is just about this prison within a prison for like people they think they might be able to rehabilitate in some way that you can't. They're all horrible people. And just the horrible things that happen to people in the prison and how the story goes. And so I wanted to write a prison story. I took a lot of inspiration from that, especially for like the gangs in my story. So like there's a elvish supremacists. So they're like white supremacists, but elves, because I thought who better to take that role than elves? Obviously they're perfect for it. And there's the orcish gang. There's the consortium of the small folk consortium. So that's like halflings and gnomes and even some kobolds kind of working in that together. And they're very racial because in that setting, you just kind of look for what connections you have with people because you're in a pit. All the resources are coming in through the sky that they're just chucking down there and you have to fight over them to survive. So you're just looking for people you connect with. And I wanted that to be kind of how the society down there worked. And it was really fun to write, to be honest. Yeah. To take all those pieces of media I already enjoy and just kind of slip them in there.
Yeah. I don't think people have done the whole gang idea super well so far. John Stovall has a demon card enforcer story right now that I think it was really good. He also like MG Driver's story was pretty good. He had this I forget what it was called, but it's on Scribble Hub. It's pretty good, like mafia kind of Godfather kind of progression story. It's pretty nice.
That could be fun.
But you were saying like. I think it was before the show, like the proper show started, that you don't particularly enjoy like these endless kind of stories, right? You kind of write your thing and then you're done with it. My question then is like, so we're not going to see your main character blot out the sun with rats.
Not with rats, maybe with bats briefly, but this is another one thing with Downtown Druid. I kind of wanted the power scaling to be a little more like localized. There's so many stories where characters become these like godlike entities. Yeah. And I kind of wanted it to be my favorite part in progression fantasy and lit RPG stories is kind of the early phases.
Yeah.
Like when they're gathering strength, they're able to take on one guy and maybe a couple thugs, a bandit or two, and then they move on to like a bugbear and like an army, not an army of goblins, but like a squad of goblins themselves. Like that early part where they're kind of gathering strength is always my favorite because it feels more visceral to me, like a little more real. Yeah. And by the time you're fighting like dragons, in my opinion, that should be like the peak. You know, if you can kill a dragon, you're one of the strongest people on that planet. Dragons are epic, monstrous, powerful, demigod-like creatures. That should be like the highest you can go. And after that point, I start to kind of lose interest. Like when you can destroy a galaxy, when you become like multiversal, I think is the power scaling term, where you can just destroy whole realities with a flick of your wrist. I kind of like, well, this isn't something I can relate to. You know what I mean? It's cool. I can see the fun. No, I can't. But
that's a skill issue.
Everything I do results in me realizing it's a skill issue. So Downtown is gonna kind of he's gonna get up there. It's gonna end in three books. I'm already a third of the way through book two on RR and almost done with book two in my actual writing. But it's not gonna end with him like taking over the world or the country. Even it's just gonna be him at this city level throughout the whole thing. And I think people actually like that overall.
Yeah, because I mean, like I don't know who made that point. I think it might even have been like the Fire or Zog, or Shurdalone. But they were like, if people want to read these like epic fantasies that are just literally just numbers going up and people getting more stronger, and completely eradicating galaxies. He Who Fights as Monsters isn't getting there, not yet. But I mean, Zora's pretty much going there. He even said on the podcast when he was on, he said like, "There's always going to be a bigger sun that I can shoot an arrow through." Right. First, the Fire is obviously going strong in that direction. Randidly ended to a shocking twist of events. Right. But like these stories, kind of like they do kind of keep going forever, and people can read them, right? Because like they're not jumping the shark, because jumping the shark is the entire point of the story.
Yeah.
And like, you're on fire while doing it. Looking awesome.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Look, walk over falls.
Absolutely. I think that reading it is very fun. I couldn't imagine writing it, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah. See, I couldn't either. And the point I was going to make was that I really enjoy these like smaller power fantasies in a vacuum, right? I really enjoy that because I think at some point there has to be like a real sense of struggle there. I think when I had Sunray CV on, he even said, "Oh yeah, there's going to be another fight scene, and probably this guy just like teleports behind him and kills him." That's what he does. And I see that because at that point it's just more about the slice of life, right? It's more about the interactions and the people. It's basically a soap opera, which is good because people like that, and they might like that. But I really want to write stuff where every single action is meaningful. Right, where a fight isn't decided before it starts, and it's something I like to read. If I'm even when I'm reading like Ripple System, we were talking about it earlier, it's in VR, and still I'm reading about this boss fight, and I've caught myself going like, "He won't make them lose, will he?" he won't, and then I was like, "Okay, this is a good story," because even though it's all in virtual reality, it doesn't really care. Like, sure, he just drops the item and he gets a new one, or he like goes into the next game or whatever. He's going to lose his friends. And the point there being that there's the suspense is still there. I don't know if the suspense would still be there for me with Prominent Hunter, because I haven't read it that far, right? It is still with our shirt, because it's always... Because, Jason's still silver rank. He's never going to get gold.
I think he'll get there. I think in 12 more books, he'll make it.
Don't give him any ideas. But yeah, so that was a long tangent of me basically agreeing with you. So,
hey, I love when people spend a long time agreeing with me. That's one of my favorite things. So no worries about that at all.
That's why you're a PM.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because if they don't agree with me, hell out. But yeah, and it's all about how you make stakes, I guess. Like you can make, you can make the stakes huge. You can make them galaxy spanning. They kind of lose some touch, I think, on a personal level. But if you still have them have those personal connections with other people, you can still give them stakes. So like Ripple System's a great example of that. You were just saying his friends are really the stakes. The stakes is his friendships and the connections he's made, because he didn't have those before he went into the VR. That's what he got from going in. Yeah. And I think that in Zog and, well, Shirt's books, absolutely, the relationships are a big part of the stakes. And usually things do not go well in those regards, but it still adds a lot of depth to it, I think.
It's a downward spiral. A fun one, but it's a downward spiral.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what would you say the main point of your books are?
Each of them kind of has a different main point, I would say. But the overall theme and thing that I'm going for is when people read them, I want them to be having fun. There isn't like a very deep point to any of my books. I'm not like one of those people who goes in with this a grand theme in mind beyond I just really want people to have fun reading them.
But Chris, how do you inflict emotional damage?
I have fun when I'm getting emotionally damaged by the things I'm reading and watching personally. Like that's some of the best parts is when an author or an actor just pulls the rug out from under you and you're like, oh my God, what happened? It's some of the most fun you can possibly have. And that's kind of something I try to put in my books. Even when a character death that you didn't see coming happens, I want you to be like, well, that was enjoyable though. It had a little bit of a kick to it, you know, like eating something spicy, you know, you got that little bit of extra flavor on it.
Yeah.
And I think I said this in the pre-interview part where Armor is, someone told me it was just a 3-star book. It was just a fun read, and then he was over it. And I didn't take offense to that because I like writing potato chip fiction. I like writing pulp.
Yeah.
I like writing stuff that just people can enjoy on a weekend and then move on with their day. Some of my favorite books are just like single novels that you can read and you just enjoy. And I still think about them years later. And I don't mind being a writer who's like that. I don't need to be more important or deeper than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my issue is still that I'm trying to be Scott Lynch and Patrick Rothfuss, where it is a fun progression fantasy and people are having fun, but you know, like it's also, there's also like cool little stuff like tied in there, and I forget that these people literally edited themselves to death. I'm very very sorry about them.
I don't think Rothfuss, I think he's a one and done kind of guy.
No, I could just imagine being in that position, right?
Yeah.
You wrote this book basically together with your dad, and then your dad passed away, and now like you got that to like deal with, and also you're like, well, like I know how the story would go on, but like nothing really makes sense that I've crafted this gigantic behemoth that I now no longer know how to control because I've pantsed every single second of it.
Yeah.
Scott Lynch just had like massive depression because he felt like he wasn't good enough to write a new book. Poor dude.
I know. And they're fantastic. I also think about, I know people don't give him a lot of sympathy, but George R. R. Martin with Winds of Winter, I think of too. Yeah. And I think that the key, if I was them, and I'm not them, and that's a good thing, is that you just got to start trimming. Like, I think if I were them, I would just start taking some of the narrative branches that they've built, and I would just take the clippers to them and just go, that guy's dead, that's done, we're not doing that, and then just try to refocus. But I'm not them. Yeah. And that's a good thing, because their stories are going to be stronger when they do come out, because they are that detailed and that focused and that driven. And but yeah, I can't imagine the pressure that they're under with all that stuff they have to deal with.
Exactly. And I mean, like, for R. Martin, it's like, just I still think that you could. So Bratton Sanderson, right? He famously, he writes these like huge ass novels over here, right? These, and right, and then this is like, in between he writes like fun little novellas of like 60,000 words. Yeah. So he literally he can't stop writing. He's just like my buddy Sean, where it's just like the words have to come out, which I both envy and also like, oh, poor dude, like, yeah. Right? But I think Brandon Sanderson like actually seems like a pretty level dude. But yeah,
This is another thing that makes me a bad progression fantasy and fantasy reader in general. I have not read any Brandon Sanderson. I have the Mistborn trilogy on my shelf right there because I found it at Goodwill, and I have not even begun to touch it.
I think you will really. I think you will really enjoy Mistborn, because Mistborn is a fantasy heist novel. You're really going to enjoy that.
Yeah, that's what everybody tells me. But the thing is, the more people tell me to do something, the less I'm likely to do it.
Okay, you should absolutely not read that.
Okay. Not. See, now I'm motivated. Now I might.
I forbid you. There's a German rule against us somewhere. I'll find it.
You Germans and your rules. Sorry, you walked in. I had to say it.
Yeah, this eyes open, yeah. Very transparent about it. So actually, we were talking about so many other things. Why don't we just jump into the next question?
Okay.
What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Oh, actually, let me pull up my notes for this one, because I didn't want to give the same advice everybody gives of you got to write, because I think that one's been done
well, to death. At this point, I pretty much like poke people about it, go like, yeah, but beyond that, like, what do you want to write? Like,
so you're already ready. How? Like, hey, I need some more depth here. I need you to give a little more. Yeah, I mean, obviously, write, you have to actually write. There's so many people who get bogged down in world building and they have to have their perfect story. And it's like, you just got to start putting stuff down.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, for me, and this is advice I got or I read on Reddit forever ago. And it's not really writing advice specifically. It's actually DMing advice for being a dungeon master, D&D. And it is, you got to be careful what you let people see behind the curtain. You got to be careful with how you show your hand. He was discussing how so much of his campaign, he had a certain amount planned and a certain amount that he riffed. And at one point, players were so enthused about the section that he'd just run. They're like, how did you do this? How did you plan this? And he told them that he didn't, that he just kind of was riffing at that part. And some of the enjoyment, some of the light behind their eyes kind of went out. And the other part of it was when you tell people how you do things in too much specificity, you are kind of giving them power in the story that they might not really have. And so how I interpret this with my writing is I am a show don't tell person. Absolutely. I do almost no exposition, like chunky exposition blocks. And part of me regrets that, because I have a lot of cool world building in the background that I would love to show. But if I show it, it is set. It is set in stone. Anything I do or say now has to reference what I have set in stone. And if I don't do that, I have a lot more freedom. I have a lot more control over the story. And I'm a control freak. So that's what I want. I want that absolute control. And that's actually one of the reasons I have trouble with system novels and with hard power systems just in general. Because when you create a hard power system, you are giving the reader control over your story, because you've now said, this is how the system works. This is how power works in the setting.
Yeah.
So the reader will call you on it. They will be looking for it. You are now on a path that you have to follow, and branching from the path is if you want to do it, because you're still the writer, you're still God of whatever you're doing, you now have to piss off that reader who you told this is how things work. And I like soft power systems for that reason. I like a little bit of wiggle room. I mean, even in Dead Man, because it's a little RPG, it's got a system, but it's kind of a soft system, and it's kind of a soft little RPG. Like, it's not super set in stone. I even made it explicit that the system itself is kind of borked. Like, it's not built correctly because it was a government project that was not run properly. And so it's got a lot of issues with it that don't actually function the way that they're supposed to. And because of that, I got to be like, when people were like, in Reddit, not Reddit, Royal Road comments and things, they're like, well, shouldn't this do this? I could be like, nah, it just doesn't work right. You know?
Yeah.
I have that control over my story still. And I respect those people who can build hard power systems and really enjoy writing them. But wow, as I said, I am too much of a control freak. You think you'd be a control freak for having the hard power systems, but in my mind, it's like you're giving the readers so much power when you do that.
My God, will you ever enjoy Brandon Sanderson?
I like reading hard power systems, actually. That's the thing. I don't mind reading them because then, as I said, I'm a control freak. So you're giving me control. I love that. But I don't want to give other people control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. To a certain degree, though, there is something to be said about hard power systems. Like, so Torchbearer, I completely pantsed. That was good.
Yeah,
like the power system too. I pantsed everything about it.
Oh wow!
And like, because like I keep exploring new stuff, and as something new happens, like, so the way I'm doing it is, the system builds itself as the story goes on, and I think the setting that I'm writing is the only setting that actually works. So I toss in some other stuff that doesn't work like it should, and it's quite clear that it doesn't work as it should. And people ask themselves, like, how does it work? And I say, I don't know yet. I want to find out. But that's the thing. I'm going to write to find out. That's the fun part for me. That's what I love about writing the story. But for Band, for example, I can't do that because it has a functioning system, and it actually has two systems that kind of like have to go together some way, and I have to like plot that still, and I don't like that. So I'm going to fuzz it a little bit. One of the two systems is like super fuzzy, and the other one I'm going to force to be super fuzzy. So we'll see how it goes. Because just like you, I don't particularly enjoy having all these numbers and having to crunch them.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, is doing this math in the background is,
yeah,
it's not fun for me at least. So
that being said, though, there's something to be said about constraints. Right, where you are writing, like, for example, okay, cool, agility gives you this and this stat increase, and it makes you able to climb faster. And then suddenly you're in a position where, like, it would be really cool if there could be a chase, right? But your main character can just climb up a wall and be done with it,
yeah,
because it's like 99 agility. So now, or dexterity, or whatever you want to call it. So now you have an issue because, like, you cannot have any tension anymore. So what do? Like, are you going to, like, find out a new weird dumb rule? Like, oh, the wall is slick with oil. Ha, 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 ha. Exactly. Like, it's you're fighting in a grease factory. Like, see, but now we're getting somewhere. Like, why are we in a grease factory? Like, what happened? Right?
Yeah.
So suddenly we're getting somewhere. Right? Suddenly there's, like, a cool new idea coming up. And this is what I like about constraints.
No, I do agree. I think that the most important thing in writing a progression fantasy is the constraints, I think. Mm-hmm. It's how you put a cap on things is almost more important than the powers themselves. Like in Downtown Druid, he can control rats, right? And he has this mark on his arm. It's like a tattoo of rat fangs, as if they'd bit into him. And it fills with gold the more favor he has with rats as an entity. It's like a god. And once that runs out, he no longer has that explicit absolute control over them. And I had to put that in there because if he can just control rats, then the story is already over. If you control every rat in the city, that's a billion rats. I can just swarm them on anything. there's no reason to have any more conflict. So yeah, I do see what you're saying. And I work it in, you can work it into soft power systems too, the constraints, and you kind of have to. And there's such an important part of it. I don't think people always realize. So that's a very good point.
You just have to like not make the mistake of forgetting about certain constraints you put in and on a whim, like a couple of pages ago, and then you find out like, oh crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you need to plot. That being said, I like plotting now. How do you do?
Yeah.
Huge fan of plotting.
I pantsed armor and dead man almost all the way through. Like, I'd occasionally have a scene I knew I had to put somewhere later, but generally I just wrote them. But in Downtown Druid, it's gotten so complicated that for the first time, I actually was like, towards the end of book one, I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. I have a lot of threads here, a lot of characters, more characters than I've ever had to keep track of. I need to actually sit down and wrangle it. And so I just took like I took a whole week off writing, and I was like, let's just plot the whole second book chapter by chapter. Let me create a character codex and just try to actually track all this stuff down. And it has made it a lot easier to write and a lot stronger. Cause in my mind, pantsing is like, oh, I just go. I just turnkey. It's all there. It's all in my head. I've got it. And for simpler books, I think you can do that. No problem. Yeah. And I think you can do a book one of anything that way. If you really want to, even if it's going to be complicated, book one, first 200K words, you could probably do it and then go back and figure things out, as long as you didn't totally screw yourself, which probably does happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And
why never? No, that doesn't happen to anyone.
Oh yeah. And so now I'm kind of more of a plotter. Even the series I have planned, not even the series, I'm doing a standalone after I finish Druid. I've already got like the first third of it explicitly plotted. Just because I started to enjoy it. I started to enjoy having that roadmap in place, which, you know, for a PM, maybe I should have realized roadmap planning was important, but, you know, we all forget sometimes.
Say Gantt chart once, and I will kick you off this podcast.
Yeah, I plot my chapters in JIRA. each one is a different story, and it's all tied to the
epic. This podcast is now over because the host has died. God, like most roadmaps are artistic explorations in insanity.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's nothing
There's not nothing about them that's true. They're just like shiny pictures that make people feel secure.
Yeah, you're painting like, on clouds.
You can go in and go like, hey, you know what? You want to feel good? Here's a picture of a puppy cuddling a bunny.
Aww.
Like, I got this off of Imgur, and it took me like 30 seconds. So how about you take that instead of my roadmap, which will take me like 3 workdays?
Yeah. And like a dozen meetings you don't want to have, and a bunch of conversations that don't matter.
Yeah. But reporting is important, so people can tell you what you knew already anyway, because you're way, 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 way more invested in the problem than they are. So, yeah. Yep.
Oh, another piece of advice I want to mention really quick. Mm-hmm. To take criticism with grace. It's some people it's easy to take criticism from because they're nice about it. They'll be like, hey, on this chapter, I think there was a continuity error because you said this before, and now you said this. And you're like, oh, well, thank you for pointing that out. I'll fix that. But on Royal Road in particular, sometimes you get a comment where the person is just has the tone of the worst person you've ever met or heard of in your life, and they've got an anime profile picture, and they're telling you that you're the terrible writer and everything you write is dog shit, and you better fix this one thing in particular because it really stands out as egregious. And you need to be able to look at that one thing. You need to be able to take a breath and go, God damn it, that's a good point. And I do need to change that, even though I hate you with every fiber of my being. I am going to make that change, and then I am going to block you, and I will never see you again. But that is a valid point, so thank you.
My advice is and always will be to try and cuddle them down. Mm-hmm. Right? You want to foster the environment that it goes around in your comments. So all the readers that I still have that followed me from the old version of Torchbearer to like Genesis of the Sacred Machine, they're all nice people.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Like every like I got my comment section is full of like poetry and people are like, hey, this is cool. Oh, I recognize that guy. That's cool. Like, oh wow, this is a cool improvement. It's really like feels really good. Like feel it really vindicating. But I've been using a Captain Holt GIF a lot. And I still remember what my first couple of chapters were like when I first launched.
Yeah.
You know? Most of them were right. The story wasn't all that good. Main character was like kind of being a bitch. And she didn't all have all that much agency. But yeah, now it's actually pretty okay. And also, I only did that by doing what you suggested, right? You gotta go through it and go like, they're kind of right. Yeah. And separating, you know, the whole emotional aspect from the rational, like it's hard work. It's really hard work. It's lifting weights, basically. But also...
I agree that cultivating your audience is very important. You gotta do that DAO of audience that you have to cultivate. Because the people who followed me from Armor all the way through Deadman into Downtown Druid, they're great commenters. They're friendly when they give criticisms. It's very reasonable. But and you'll see this eventually when you hit like a 5K or more story, which you might get to since you're on RS right now. But keep fingers crossed.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, it just gets to the point where you can't fully control it anymore. Like it kind of gets out of your control. Like I've been on front page now since I was on RS because I'm like number 9 on best ongoing. Mm. And you never know who's going to filter it and just say the most heinous thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree though. Cultivating is still important. Yeah. You should still make an effort to that no matter how big you get. I know Zog and Norit both were always, and Melis. I know Melis is hardcore. If they don't like somebody in their audience, they're just going to, you're gone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, it would be as easy as, you know, like going through and blocking people. But I always give people, like a benefit of a doubt, right? I'm like, hey, look, like, really see your point. Have you considered this and this? Also, I'm a human being. And the way you said that, you know, didn't really make me feel like a please don't do it again. Like, I see where you're coming from. Good point. But please, you know, watch your tone. And then if you do it again, I'm like, I'm going to block you now. Because, like, it's my right. You're coming to my yard and you're yelling at me, I can just tell you to fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, and originally I used to be super combative with people who were that way. Like I'd be like, hey, go fuck yourself. Like, just don't ever talk to me again. And I'd block them. Yeah. But now if I see something that bothers me, I just don't react. And I won't even block them from actually commenting. I'll just block it from my sight. Because I still want people to interact with the story. And he might have good points that other people want to see. Yeah. I'll just not see it anymore. Because it's just me that it's bothering. No one else cares.
And then you're commenting on all the other ones except for those.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's fun.
Those people who are giving me good comments, now they get some attention.
Yep.
Yeah.
Virtual cycle. There we go. Social engineering. Let's go.
All right.
Nah. Okay. Yeah, what's the next question? Because we're approaching about like the 1 hour mark and we haven't gone to the third question yet. The third question I got is, what's one thing that you would love to go back to and change? Or what's something that you learned and you're now going to do completely different?
This is actually a really obvious one for me. I had decided after I finished Armor that I was going to write not one, but two stories at the same time and post them simultaneously on Royal Road. So one of those was Deadman. And I love Deadman. I'm still very proud of it. And the other was one called Young World, which is still on Royal Road on my page.
I saw that.
And it is a far more traditional, it is a isekai lit RPG with a D&D style system. Isekai's into a cave, meets some dwarves, gets out, joins an adventuring party, he doesn't slay the dragon, he convinces the dragon to chill out type thing at the end. But spoilers for a book one of a series I'm never going to complete. And they both hit RS at the same time, and they both did pretty well. Like, I think that one at its height hit like 1600 followers, which is solid. It's solid. And normally if that had been my only story, I absolutely would have continued writing it, but my focus was divided and both stories were weaker because I was not putting the attention in that I needed to. And I could tell that Young World was the one I didn't like writing, because I'd always, when I booted up my computer, I'd pull up the Dead Man doc first and I'd start writing that, and I'd be like, oh, what a good chapter. That was great. And then I would just I'd be like, oh, before I open Young World, I need to take a coffee break. You know, let me take a coffee break. You know, the lawn is looking a little shaggy. Maybe I should mow the lawn really quick. And too dirty for me to focus on writing. So I think I'll just do that before I open up this chapter and go from there. And
emotions.
Yeah. So I did finish book one of it. And I still think even now, like, what if I could have just taken that, it's like 120,000, almost 130,000 words, and just put those on another story. I would be so much happier than just seeing this book length work that I completed just sitting there. And I plotted book two. Like, I went in to try to motivate myself to write more of it, because a lot of people liked it a lot. And I went in to plot it, and I just couldn't actually put keys to keyboard, you know, just couldn't do it. So,
yeah.
So anyone who watches this, who's wondering whatever happened to Young World, the two of you, that might be doing that. It's not. I'm not going to finish it. I've already butchered it for parts to use in other stories. So it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I've even stolen names from it to use in Druid. Like, it's done.
Yeah. I can never bring myself to do that.
The story.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
To just, like, kill a story completely.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the reason why I'm still writing Torchbearer. It's twofold. So, first off, I promised people I would finish the story. And I left it, not at a cliffhanger, I think it was a very good end, but it was obvious the story wasn't done. Like, obviously the story wasn't done, right? So it was like the entire first book was just planned as a tutorial. Like, 10 chapters Morty, in and out. Turned out, it turned like 100 chapters. So, But, so there are parts of the story that I'm probably never going to write. Or if I'm going to write them, I'm going to write them from a different point of view. Because, I don't know, like, or maybe just like Genesis, like, completely takes off now and people love that. And then I can write like the 6-book story that I have planned. But maybe not. So I'm going to write 3. And I have a very satisfying ending for 3. People are going to hate it, but I kind of really want to be done with the story in a way, you know?
I understand.
Where I can then, you know, focus on band, or I have like another couple of stories that I really want to write. Or maybe I'll, you know, stop this podcast and turn into a gremlin and start writing smut because I really like money. Like, I don't know.
I get what you're coming from, but good smut is apparently very hard to write, according to my wife. So I don't know. You got to be careful about that. A lot of people think they can do it, and they absolutely can't. Just like a lot of people think they can write lit RPG, and they absolutely can't. So you got to be careful.
That's assuming I haven't done it before.
Oh, that's a good point. I shouldn't judge.
No, your point is completely correct. Good smut is hard to write, and it does get very formulaic. And way more formulaic than an RPG. And like, I know some people who have done that in the past and who didn't enjoy it and were like, you know what? I'm just done with this. There's no guns in here, no elves, no magic swords. Like,
you could put guns and elves in your smut. People do it all the time these days.
That's the point. Yeah, I mean, like, in the end.
Generated covers all day when I go into my Amazon. Oh, big bosoms. You guys have fun. I hope they enjoy that harem book.
I'm not gonna do that.
Don't do that. Like, I was just saying.
I like writing for fun. So I had this discussion with someone on my Discord recently. I have this discussion every couple of months, where I'm like, hey, like I've did a new thing. What do you guys think? And they're like, why are you still writing the story? It will never be successful. Or like, oh, this is actually really good. It's a shame it will never be successful. Like one of the two. And I'm like, look, basically, I've been doing pottery for about like 5 years now. Right? I'm okay doing pottery. Like I'm okay throwing pots. And not once has someone come to me like, hey, what's your Etsy store? What's your Etsy store doing? Mm-hmm. Like how many pots are you selling each week? I'm like,
yeah,
because
why is writing so different? Yeah,
exactly. And there's this wonderful comic where it's like this guy knitting a scarf, and he's got like, oh, this is such a relaxing hobby that I found. And then it's like a demon on the shoulder, like a gigantic demon. He's like, make a profit out of it. He's like, but can I just enjoy this? No.
Yeah, I get you.
Monetize your free time. And he's like, then the last panel is just him like sitting there super grumpy in front of a stall saying like, Kevin's stupid scarves, $20. Because like, I just really like writing. So why can't I just write? And if it takes off, cool. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. Like you, I like my job. I don't need to quit my job. I'm not trapped. I'm yeah. cool. I'm done. Right.
That's the thing.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah. And people don't, when you quit your job to go full time, you're actually losing a bit of freedom with how you write, because you would now have to write to market. You need to succeed. Yeah. So you can't experiment. You can't go out there and try something people haven't done before. You need to write to market and make it work. And if you want to write the stuff you really want to write and it's not to market, that you need to do both at the same time, and you have to make it work. And some people do, but that's hard.
If you really want to write, like, so the decision that I love this phrase. The decision is always, do you want to, like, do you live to write? And most writers will say yes, but do you want to write to live? Because that's a different question, right? And I personally don't. Like, I loved the time when I had like this half year where I could just like write whenever I wanted. Yeah. Right. I wasn't very like proficient at it. I did a lot of other shit in the meantime. But I pumped up my 2,000 words each day. It was good. It's fine.
Yeah.
But now thinking that if I had to do it and maybe even write something that I didn't enjoy, So the two ways of doing this is like, you only ever stop your day job if it starts costing you money,
mm-hmm.
right? Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you switch to a job that makes you less money? Unless, of course, you can like live off of the less money, right? And you're cool with it, and you hate your main job. Like, that's fine. I'm not your life coach. You can do whatever you want.
Yes,
but
you're all grown men or women. You do what you want.
the other thing is like, you hit it so big that you're getting like 2 million in advance, and you don't need to work for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Right, or like depending on your budget, it might not be 5 years, but it might be like 20, but probably 20, right? And then you can do that. You can do whatever the fuck you want. Or maybe after tax it would be more like 10. So let's chill out. But so then you can do what you want. So yeah, like writing. Writing as a career is not as glamorous as people think. And no. I kind of worry for many of the younger people in the space that start writing now, and they have like good incomes, like $2,000 a month, right? Which is good if you're in college.
Yeah. That's great money is when you're 20s, like you're not really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
People underestimate how much money their parents are spending on them.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I mean, I have two kids, I have a house, I have to work full time. Like, in order to make enough money as a writer to go full time, I would have to do insanely well. I would have to hit Jim Butcher levels of success, you know, at minimum. And it's not happening. Like, I think I'm an okay writer and I have fun with it, but I'm not getting there. So that's
why. I think you actually could, but we should talk about that after the podcast, because I don't think we want to like make too many more tangents. We're almost at the 1 hour mark.
Sorry about that.
There you go. So the next question I have is, what's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Oh, so this is not progression fantasy. It's not even fantasy. My very favorite book, and it's a series of about 20 books. It's the Foreigner series by C.J. Cherry. And it's a science fiction series about human colonists that go across the galaxy to colonize a world, but there's an accident. And they are briefly stuck in this horrible minefield. Half of the ship dies, and they can only do a jump that's much shorter than the original one. And so they kind of plan it out to go to this planet that is nearby that looks livable. And they arrive at it, and stuff already lives there. People already live there. They're called the Atevi. And so the ship's like, listen, we're going to leave some people on a satellite here. We're going to look for more resources, see if we can find another planet, and we're going to come back. You are to stay on that satellite. You are not to interact with the populace. You are not to leave it. And the ship leaves. And like very shortly after, the people on the satellite are like, kind of sucks here. I think maybe down there might be a little better, a little more interesting. So they land. And they immediately have some clashes with the locals. And eventually it escalates into this huge war where humans lose, even with their superior technology. Because these aliens, they are like 8 feet tall. They look like drow. They look like dark elves with yellow eyes that reflect like cat's eyes. So they can see in the dark. And they're actually afraid of humans because humans' eyes don't reflect in the dark. So you don't know where they are when it's dark. And I always thought that was a fun thing. And they isolate humans on this island nation, and that island nation is happy, successful. They have pretty good economy and society that's just like Earth society was around now. And between them and the Atevi, they have to give them something called a Padi, which is this translator whose job is to culturally talk to the Atevi and occasionally give them technologies and stuff like that. And he has to be careful about what technologies they give because they don't want them to ruin the planet because everybody lives there. So even though they might be like, hey, we want automatic weapons and cars, it has to be like, I can't do automatic weapons and cars today. Would you like trains? I can do trains. Trains are fine.
Best I can do is wind power solar systems.
Yeah. And the whole thing is the main character is the Padi. His name is Bryn Cameron, and he's a genius because the Atevi's language, in order to understand it, you need to be, it's mathematically based. So he's a mathematic genius. He's the only person, the only human who can properly speak this language. And culturally, the aliens are a herd species. So they live in a feudal system, but that feudal system works because the aliens, that is what they are genetically inclined towards. So some people naturally have this loyalty to them. When they walk in a room, every other member of that species immediately looks to them and is like, that person is in charge. And so he has to talk to them and explain, like, humans don't have that. We'll stab someone in charge in the back like that if they're not getting us what we want. And they were like, what are you talking about? That makes no sense. And so it's 20 books of him having cultural miscommunications, assassination attempts. It's sci-fi, but it has a lot of fantasy tropes because they're living in a like just now industrializing society, and they all live wear these fancy outfits, and they have tea ceremonies and like that kind of culture. So it's just a cultural back and forth that I just love it. I love it. Everyone is, all the characters have very interesting motivations, and so I get my sci-fi hit from it. I get my fantasy hit from it. I get my drama hit from it. There's a romance between the main character and one of his bodyguards, so I get my romance hit from it, because she's also an 8 foot tall alien woman, and I'm like, I totally get it. I get this romance. This makes perfect sense to me.
Then you get your monster fucker hit from it, yeah?
Exactly. And that's why my wife reads them with me, too, so we both get to read them together and go through them. And it's just 20 books of that.
That's cute.
And C.J. Cherry is actually why my name on my books is C.V. Titus. Because I love her. I love the Foreigner series so much. I kind of want to do that little homage. And also there's already a very famous comedian named Christopher Titus. And I just didn't want to mess with that algorithm. So yeah, that's probably my favorite series of all time.
Nice.
And then that was like a good another 5 minute ramble to squeeze off some minutes.
It was an amazing ramble. Like I have so many ideas. I kind of wanted to but while we're still on the main podcast, kind of talk about this idea of people hate time skips in an RPG.
Yeah.
Because you want to have the kind of social stuff, but I really want to write a little RPG that has pre-planned time skips in there, right? It's foreshadowed at the beginning, so it's not going to be every single day is going to be written out, which is hilarious because my entire first book is basically happening one day, 100 chapters one day, nice. One afternoon, I should say.
Gosh, okay.
that's not quite true. But I've first written I needed to remember that now a day passed in the epigraph that I write every time in the second book for the first time. I'm like, oh crap, yeah, a day passed. Just go back there. Oh shit. What I really want to do there is just, have progression fantasy, but on a societal level, right? Where it's your village or whatever really does grow over time. And maybe you are a badass cultivator, and maybe you are actually outliving lots of your friends who are not badass cultivators, right? Who don't have a system or that kind of shit. Because I love these historical romance novels by a woman called Rebecca Gably. She writes in German, but it's about basically England in the 11th to 17th century. And she goes through this entire cast of characters. Basically, one book is about the lifetime of one of the heirs of this clan of people called the Warringham Clan. And it's about they get a castle, they lose a castle, and then every time you read them, oh wow, yeah, they built that thing in the last one,
yeah,
right? Or you're like, oh cool, yeah, I remember that, that was the place where they first caught their horse or whatever. That's cool. I think that's really cool. But
I love stories like that. They're not as big now, but they actually used to be huge. Isaac Asimov's Foundation series is basically that on a galactic scale of this new settlement on a planet eventually becomes the ruling dominant galactic force after 4 or 5 books. So I don't think that it's undoable. And generational storytelling. If you want to really get people into that, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is a fantastic example of that, of just we're following a family and how they've influenced society over, I think it's 200 years in an alternate timeline, I think.
Jesus.
So
I haven't watched that.
I love that. It's the most over-the-top, ridiculous thing of all time, and the creator's a madman, so I adore every second of it.
Yeah, I just remember the poses, and of course, the whole, you're already dead and you don't know a thing. It's a wonderful little thing.
And everything Theo does is my favorite thing. So I love the bad guys every time.
Give me some shout outs.
Okay. First I want to shout out Torchbearer. It's fantastic.
it's stopped now, so you can't read it anymore.
We'll read the first few chapters. At least
they're not even on there yet. The new ones, the new version is called Genesis of the Sacred Machine, and it's very, very good.
Everybody, it's
Thank
very, very
you for
good.
The shout out.
No problem. Anytime. these two people do not need shout outs for me because they're already incredibly successful authors. But Seth Ring's Dreamer's Throne.
That was good.
I really loved it. I was started reading it because I had hernia surgery, and so I had to kind of sit in bed, and it was kind of fun to read about a crippled character. Well, I wasn't crippled, but I was unable to interact with things the normal way. And I love that kind of, I like very mental characters who you have to be clever to figure out how to solve problems more than just punching. I like punching characters too, but it was really nice to read a lit RPG in that vein. And he did a fantastic job. So
did you know that he wrote this after he adopted a kid, and the kid Seth adopted a kid, and the kid is, I think, disabled.
That makes me feel bad for calling the main character crippled, but it's still accurate.
It's a word.
I didn't know that, but that's awesome. I mean, it's a great work. I don't think it's doing, I mean, the worst a Seth Ring book could do is still pretty incredible, but I don't think it's doing quite as well as his other stuff. And I think that's a shame, because it's a really good book. Series. And the other one is one that just, I really don't need to wreck it, but Resident of Randidly Ghost Hound. If you want to understand the lit RPG genre and where people have gone with it, it is a foundational piece of it that inspired I would say all of the big ones have at least been a little bit inspired by it. So I'd recommend reading at least the first few books of that. Absolutely. They're also a fun read. They flow real well. So if you want to learn a little bit more about the foundations on Royal Road and Lit RPG, that's something I'd highly recommend.
All right. Cool. And with that, people still need to fill their bingo cards. I'm going to shout out Merchant Crab by my buddy host. There you go. That's your bingo card. Okay. Chris, this is the end of the main podcast.
Okay. This is very climactic.
Yes. It's climactic because you, dear listener, have not clicked the follow button yet. Please click the follow button and ring the bell, summon the ancient demons, submit to the hunger. You know, the usual stuff. Yeah. And if you're on Spotify, or if you're on iOS or whatever, give me a rating. If you enjoyed the podcast. If you didn't enjoy the podcast, please don't give me a rating. Because that will ruin my rating.
Same attitude with all book ratings. I get it.
Exactly. Right? Thank you so much for listening. Sure. And if you want to, there's more stuff on Patreon that you can check out, but you don't need to. I think I'm always going to upload the bulk of the podcast, the main questions, always on here. And the rest is just, quote unquote, just 1 to 2 hours of aimless rambling, which is different from the main podcast, because the main podcast is aimful rambling. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Chris, any last words?
Everybody spend money on my books.
Yes, please do that. Also, go check out his Patreon. It's really, really good. It's community underrated. You should go and read his books. Thank you so much. And I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.